Hello out there, constant listeners. I hope everything is going well in your lives and with your situations. I'm Nick Deolius. This is our second installment of our podcast, The Far Middle. And again, we're proceeding through the book, The Leech, and talking about some of the themes that are included therein. Today, we want to talk about the four broad types of job categories and professions and endeavors that are out there in our economy and in our society today. Those four are the creators, the enablers, and the servers. And last but not least, of course, the leech. And thinking about those four initially, what really comes to mind, interestingly enough, is a song from Sesame Street. Now, I was a Sesame Street kid. I'm sure a lot of you out there were as well. I was obsessed with it, frankly. And played a huge role in my development. But Ernie, my buddy Ernie from Sesame Street, he had a song. And the song was effectively one about how one of these things is different. And one of these things doesn't belong. One of these things isn't like the others. So the idea there, of course, was to teach kids how to group and differentiate. But I think that song today is really applicable with the subject matter of this podcast. Because of those four job types of creators, enablers, servers, and the leech, one of those job categories is different, one of them doesn't belong, and one of them isn't like the other. And the one, of course, is the leech. But talking about the first three, what's a creator, what's an enabler, what is a server, there's many different ways to define those. A lot of jobs, individuals, and professions are hybrids. They have certain components of one and the other. It's not just a simple, you're one of these three or four job categories and you're not the other, any of the others. But generally speaking, creators, enablers, and servers are the best of what mankind has to offer. Creators are out there creating value, creating products, inventing. When you think of classic creators, it can be the person who is coming up with a new product for society, someone that's developing a cure, someone that's developing a new approach to something, or it could be many blue-collar professions, the construction industry, the building trades. Those are largely the creator class as well. They're creating something tangible for the betterment of society, and it's almost the epitome of competent man, so to speak. The enablers out there, the enablers are crucial. The enablers, I think of if a surgeon is a creator because they're creating health, then the operating room nurse is the enabler. They're turning loose the creator to allow them to let it rip and be the best that they can be, so to speak. The financier is an enabler. They are enabling the inventor, who's the creator, to bring their invention to scale, to society at large, without the financing. They would not be in a position to do so. So they're enabling the creation or invention of the creator to reach the masses, so to speak. The servers are a really interesting group. We tend sometimes to think of servers as subservient or below creators and enablers or others. I think that's a mistake and a misnomer of what they are. Servers, to me, really encompass different types of concepts in economics. And really the two key ones are just enjoyment and the second one of utilization. So servers, whether it's a waitress in a restaurant, a landscaper, a business executive, who I think is a server, also entertainment. They could be the biggest names in Hollywood, rock musicians, professional athletes. They're doing one of two things. They're either increasing the enjoyment of the individual. So the waitress at a restaurant, it allows us to go enjoy a meal with friends or family, increasing our enjoyment, or they're increasing the utilization, the efficiency of the broader system. If the landscaper is cutting the grass, that allows other servers, other creators, other enablers that own the lawn to have more time freed up to go do what they do best. So there's a utilization efficiency benefit that's important to servers, and there's also an enjoyment on an individual level benefit that's important to servers. Without servers, the economy ceases to function. Make no mistake about it. And as important as servers are, and obviously as important as enablers are, we also need to keep in mind on the flip side of this that it is somewhat sequential. Without creators, there are not going to be the products or the breakthroughs that allow the enablers to do what they do. And then without the enablers and the creators, there's not going to be the quality of life and the resources that are available to allow the servers to be put to their best efforts. So the ball gets rolling. Prerequisite for success in an economy and a society is the creators. That then leads to the second step, which is the next building block of enablers. And then last but not least, you've got the servers, all three of which working in concert really put an economy or a nation in the best possible place it could be. Now, one of the fundamental differences, perhaps the fundamental difference between creators, enablers, and servers versus the leech. With a creator or enabler or a server, even when they fail at whatever endeavor they're pursuing, the rest of us, the rest of society, usually learns something or benefits in some way. So there's usually, in my way of thinking about it, there's no such thing as a failed creator, enabler, or server. Maybe Calvin Coolidge, President Coolidge, summed it up best when he said that the chief business of the American people is business. They are profoundly concerned with producing, buying, selling, investing, and prospering in the world. That's not only true, it also summarizes creators, enablers, and servers. Now, the converse of that with the leech is that the leech really achieves its aim when the rest of society suffers. It's a bit of a zero-sum game, as we'll discuss in a couple of minutes. But looking at these different job categories, when it comes to creators, enablers, and servers, the drivers of our economic engine and our society, it really comes down to an issue about just the essence of what the United States of America is, what got us to where we've become the envy of the world. So you see historians and economists, you know, they always come up with different number one drivers of what basically determined our successful outcome to date. Sometimes you'll see historians say, well, it's geography. The fact that we've got two oceans between us and the rest of the world, that has bought us time historically during world conflict or insulated us from getting entangled within fights and dramas elsewhere. And certainly throughout different periods of our history, that's true. Sometimes you hear about geography playing the key role in United States success with respect to our river system and how that sort of developed industry and allowed for expansion and westward expansion and expansion to other regions within the nation. That's also to a certain extent true. Luck has always been something that's played a role in any nation's ultimate outcome and journey. Sometimes you hear sociologists speaking of the Protestant work ethic. And that work ethic really creating sort of the drive societally that resulted in a lot of great things from a capitalism and free enterprise perspective. So all these things were important factors, but I believe the single most important contribution to our success was really this principle of individual rights. And it's the concept of individual rights that really unleashed, from my perspective, creators, enablers, and servers throughout our history. And why did it unleash them? Because those individuals and those types of endeavors, they weren't afraid of, they weren't living in fear of a system or a state in the form of government or some group, some collective, procuring or stealing their value. So when you have creators, enablers, and servers out there that are free to toil and enjoy the fruits of their own efforts and labors, you then have a society that is built upon a culture of making. And that, to us, has been, I think, very important in our history and our success. So if the key driver to the success of our nation has been individual rights, and then those individual rights allowing creators, enablers, and servers to be confident and to go pursue their self-interest without fear of that value being taken from them or procured from them, going back to Ernie's song from Sesame Street, why is the leech the job type that is different or the profession that doesn't belong with the other three or one that isn't like the other three? Well, I think you can probably see that in the context of that inevitable tagline that we hear out there whenever there's a policy debate or an economic debate or a social debate. And the tagline is fault lines. Our nation's history is littered with dozens of fault lines that played really prominent roles through the years. You go back to the founding of the country, frankly, before the founding of our country, there was this ongoing debate about federal government versus states' rights. And lo and behold, in 2021, that debate still rages on. So that was a big fault line that played prominent through the years. You had geographic fault lines. You had North-South, of course, with the Civil War, East-West, Manifest Destiny, and now today the culture of the Western United States, California coast excluded is very different than, say, the Eastern United States or coastal Eastern United States. Political fault lines, Democrat, Republican today, but different political parties through the past. Also, urban-rural. We'll talk a lot about urban-rural and the differences and fault lines there throughout these podcasts, but that's been a big one historically and currently. Socially, black-white, of course, right? Our dark history and the bad times with respect to slavery and then the Civil War, civil rights, and everything that came from it, Jim Crow and dealing with that and you know, dealing and wrestling with those issues today to try to get to a better place. Male, female. I'm still shocked every time I think about it. And I tell younger individuals this all the time. They don't understand how relatively recent it was when females did not have the right, female citizens did not have the right to vote in this country. It's sort of amazing when you think about that. It wasn't all that long ago. So that's a fault line too, that we continue to wrestle with to try to get to a better place. Populist elitist, that's always been out there. So again, you can pick all kinds of different fault lines that have played prominent roles in our history. But today, going back to Ernie's song and going back to the four broad job categories and what made this nation a success, the big fault line today, I believe, is between creators, enablers, and servers on one side and the leech on the other. So what the fault line really emanates from is the fact that it's a zero-sum game. What I mean by that is that everything that the creator or the enabler or the server produces with respect to value, if the leech is to grow, if the leech is to be successful, if the leech is to thrive, it has to take or procure the value from one of those three prior job or professional categories. So whatever it takes, whatever the leech takes, consumes, or grows, it's going to come at the expense and to the detriment of the creator, enabler, and server. And if the creators, enablers, and servers are building and sustaining and growing our economy and our country and our society, anything that diminishes their prominence and stops or defers or deters their efforts, it's going to do the same to the country at large. What's interesting about this is also the metric of timing, because if this continues to occur and it occurs on a bigger and bigger scale, if the leech is growing, if those professions and individuals and endeavors are growing, and it is a zero-sum game, then it's coming at the expense of the creators, enablers, and servers within an economy and a society. At some point, you reach an inflection point. And the inflection point is where the leech irreversibly and permanently is tipping the scales to its favor. I question where that point is and whether or not we've reached it or not, and we'll be discussing that throughout these podcasts as well. One of the really interesting things I stumbled on when I was writing the book and just intrigued me to this day is that, yes, you need the creators, the enablers, and the servers to all work in concert. You need all three to get society to the level that you want it to get to. They're all crucial. But you also, by the same token, you have to get the prioritization and the order of that prioritization right. What do I mean by that? Well, let's start with the creator. The creator, first and foremost, has to create. If their invention doesn't come to light, then it really doesn't matter how good or how many enablers and servers you've got downstream to take it to the next level. So the prerequisite for success across all three groups in society is allowing the creator to create. You have to have that first and foremost. Then the second priority is that you have to have an enabler class and enabler professions and individuals to scale that, to take that, what the creator did, to the next level, whether it's financing it or the nurse that's helping the surgeon in the operating room or whatever the case might be with regard to the enabler class. And then once you have that secondary priority and prerequisite, that then puts and then only puts the server in the position to do his or her thing, to be able to either improve enjoyment and quality of life or to increase utilization, economic utilization across society. So you need all three. We don't get to where we are without all three working in concert, but there is a prioritization and a hierarchy within that where everything hinges first and foremost on the creator, then the enabler, then the server. When you get that prioritization backwards or upside down, some things happen that probably in a big scheme of things are not good for society at large. And you most prominently see this in the server category, particularly in the entertainment sector. We said that servers include actors in the film industry, rock musicians, professional athletes, etc. And they provide a vital function with respect to what we enjoy in life. However, if you look at how we procure and invest resources, sometimes you wonder whether we've got servers sort of prioritized a bit too high within entertainment relative to creators and enablers. And you can see that with things like professional stadiums and arenas. So billions and probably hundreds of billions of dollars of public money, taxpayer money, has been invested into stadiums and arenas through the years all over the country. And, you know, you look at the primary beneficiaries of that subsidy. Who are they? Well, they're predominantly, in the end, a billionaire owner or a corporate owner of the professional team, and a small handful of multimillionaire professional athletes. And I am not begrudging the fact that someone is a billionaire or a corporation can be successful owners of a sports enterprise that's profitable, or that an athlete should be able to command whatever the market will allow him or her to command. I'm all for those things as being a proud capitalist. But when we're investing public resources and dollars and subsidy into those, you have to question what the economic rate of return is with respect to investing so heavily in that server subcomponent. Now, the argument, inevitably, there will always be these economic studies that are touted about great rate of returns and benefits on behalf of the city or region by subsidizing these venues, these stadiums and arenas. But when you look at the details of those studies, and I love to look at those economic studies, you come away with two conclusions almost consistently across the board. One is the utilization of these facilities is very low. If you think of a football stadium, how many times a year is it actually used? So it's not a high utilization asset to begin with, which really sort of puts it behind with respect to garnering a rate of return to begin with. But two, the other jobs that are created beyond the professional athlete and to the benefit of the ownership, if you look at the other jobs that are created, you can count them. They're quantifiable. And there's people working right in the parking lots and vending concessions, security, et cetera, throughout these arenas and stadiums. But how many of those people are being paid family-sustaining wages? Not many. So, you know, there's a question about when you look at the total allocation of the subsidy, how much is actually ending up into the pockets of other enabler servers or creators, and to what extent are they getting paid and earning family-sustaining wages? I really question the rate of return because of those two drivers of different sports stadiums, and most recent being the football stadiums in Los Angeles and Las Vegas, which again are in billions and billions of dollars. The other interesting attribute or sort of example of the upside down prioritization sometimes you see within the server class, particularly with entertainment and athletics, is in big time college athletics. Most people don't realize this, but in 39 of our 50 states, the highest paid state employee is either a football coach or a basketball coach, which is amazing. And if you look at the spread in a lot of those states between what the top paid coach is earning versus what the governor of the state is earning, it's multiples of one another. In some instances, more than 10 times difference, which is crazy to think about, but nevertheless true. So why within states and all the things that states are tasked with performing on behalf of taxpayers, why do we have the majority of our states in this country paying more for a coach, let's say in football, that can design a good 3-4 defense, or a basketball coach that's really good at convincing a 17-year-old high schooler to commit to the basketball program? Why are they getting paid much more money via taxpayer dollars instead of the person in charge of, let's say, the health of the state with the chief medical officer, or that tasked with making sure that reading, writing, and math proficiencies are acceptable within the public school system within that state, or the governor herself or himself? That doesn't make much sense from the perspective of the taxpayer and from the perspective of the citizen. So getting prioritization of creators, enablers, and servers right is just as crucial, I think, is recognizing the importance that they each play individually and collectively to what we are as an economy and in a society. Now, the fourth category that we want to discuss is, of course, the leech. We could define the leech as a tribe. And certainly there'd be an argument to make there. Like all of us, it would tend to affiliate and coordinate and spend time with those like it. We could define the leech as an organism. If you look at how it consistently goes about its behavior on a regular basis, it would mimic that of an organism in nature in some ways. But the best way probably to go about this is to list and discuss the different tactics and attributes and strengths that the leech is quite adept at. and labeling them or capturing them all under the umbrella of what we would reference as the Leech Way. And let's just talk about a few of those key tactics or strengths that the Leech is quite adept at applying. One of the key attributes of the Leech Way is the ability of the Leech to adopt an ideology to cloak or hide behind its intention of achieving control and procuring value. So you'll see the Leech inject itself into the ideology or the agenda or the strategic direction of a lot of different movements, sometimes political movements, perhaps the Democratic Party, sometimes leadership, political leadership of cities or urban areas, sometimes with what would commonly be liberal organizations. And that's not to say, of course, that all Democrats or all liberals or all major cities are basically run by or controlled by the Leech, but it is saying that sometimes those types of agendas and organizations and institutions can be convenient hosts for the Leech to initially embed itself within and then assume more and more of a prominent role within to allow it to achieve its true aims. And what happens when that occurs is the original host becomes nothing more than a hollow shell that's got a familiar name. So we might associate it with what it was historically, but it's no longer that. That brand has been fundamentally changed. And you'll see another attribute of the Leech under the Leech Way. It's always able to change, adjust what were once very stalwart positions on critical issues into something different or sometimes even polar opposite positions. Because again, using sort of the approach of Lord Palmerston, who said under his observation of statecraft that nations have no permanent allies, only permanent interests, the Leech is in the end after procuring more and more value at the expense of others. And positions or ideologies are just, again, convenient hosts as long as they're serving their purpose. But once they are unable to serve that purpose, the Leech can just shed that like an extra, an old skin, so to speak, and move on to the next thing that will better avail itself to grow. So that's another aspect. Now, the Leech Way also, I think, is really good at applying dogma and making it workable. So not just dogma or ideology, but making it something that's really a useful tactical tool to allow the Leech to grow. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, you can see that across a number of different examples. And what you'll see is the concept being created and then the concept being deployed across a whole spectrum of industries, walks of life, professions, et cetera, to get maximum benefit for the Leech to be able to exert control, grow, and procure value. Climate change would be an example of this. You create the ideology, you create the thought, and then you deploy it and tailor it across all kinds of different walks of life and economic endeavors. The concept of equal outcomes, which I think is a dangerous one, equal outcomes, that is another one that has been created, but now deployed across a whole host of different walks of life for the benefit of the Leech and maybe to the detriment of a lot of achievers out there. So what happens over time is that our psychology in total, it starts to shift from a society perspective to align with that dogma. And if you think about what's occurring there, it's almost the reverse, the opposite of what happened with the Enlightenment. With the Enlightenment, back in the 1700s, you just saw this this epic shift in Western civilization. And you went from a situation where the aristocrat and sometimes the religious leader or organization, they did all the thinking. They told the individual, this is what you will believe, this is what you will do, this is how you will behave. And you replace that during the Enlightenment with the responsibility and the ability of people and the individual to think for themselves. So this concept of daring to know and daring to think for yourself was really, from my perspective, the core of the Enlightenment movement. And the Enlightenment sort of set the philosophy for the United States of America and individual rights that we spoke about a minute ago, that then in turn, of course, subsequently unleashed the creator, the enabler, and the server. Again, where the individual, not the collective, not the elite, the individual was the one that was going to deserve the fruits of the individual's labor. So the Enlightenment promoting reason above ignorance and creating a duty of self-determination, so to speak, for the individual. That is in stark contrast to the Leech way, which is looking to get back to the old way and the less informed way of making decisions for the wider society at the expense of the individual. The Leech way also sees a lot of value in scale. Scale being used to apply top-down command and control, centralized authority to achieve its aims. If you look at the Constitution and a lot of the framework of it, states' rights versus federalism, checks and balances across the three branches of government, the Bill of Rights. If you think about it in the broader context, perhaps what you see with the Constitution is really a framework to protect from this command and control, centralized authority type of structure, and to protect creators, enablers, and servers to pursue their self-interests on behalf of society's betterment, and to protect us from the Leech way. I increasingly view the Constitution as such a construct, and I think that the Founding Fathers were on to something with respect to this fear way before our time. Now, the Leech is not easygoing or lazy, quite the contrary. It is constantly looking to expand, constantly looking to grow and procure. And this is not something that's going to get caught up in short-termism or distracted with instant gratification. It plays the long game, and it is constantly looking at ways to optimize its impact, control, and procurement of value. Also, the Leech way is inclusive of very adept, very efficient marketing. What I mean by marketing in this instance is masking true intentions and instead portraying yourself or what you're after is something vital and altruistic for the other person or the other entity. So you see a government bureaucrat saying, this regulation isn't about growing my power, it's instead about improving your safety. This is here for your benefit. Or you'll see the radical environmental group saying that our position and what we're doing is not to grow our power base and grow our budget, but instead it's to improve the air that you breathe. Or the university saying our administrative staff and army isn't here to increase our influence, and we're not here to justify the increasing roles of workers. Instead, we're here to broaden the horizon of the student. You see it with religious organizations, unfortunately, where they might preach selflessness as a virtue, but in the end, it's more about control and influence of the religious organization or entity itself. So in each of these cases, they're very different types of situations, but the one common trait is that the true intentions are to procure more resource, take more decision-making away from the individual or the value-producing entity, And that's in stark contrast to how it's marketed. So they're very adept marketers because, unfortunately, a lot of us in society bite off on the marketing ploy, hook, line, and sinker. What's actually really impressive, but also scary, is the Leech's ability to utilize vocabulary as a tactical tool to just fundamentally shift society's thoughts and beliefs on some really core issues. Language has always mattered. But it's been methodically manipulated, refined, adjusted by the Leech to do its bidding, and you can see this recoding of vocabulary everywhere. I mean, it feels so much like we're living in George Orwell's world of 1984 and newspeak and Big Brother. It's amazing how forward looking that guy was when he did his best work. But just think of some of the terms and terminology today and how they've slightly changed right under our nose, but they've changed in a way that have completely shifted the entire discourse about some big issues out there. Think about truth. There used to be the truth. There was the truth and there was everything else. But today, it's not that simple. Today you have my truth, we have your truth, his truth, her truth, their truth. Truth is something today that is varied and morphable into whatever you want it to be, which creates all kinds of follow-on opportunities that you can erode away and chisel away at anything you can think of that are pretty fundamental or core to who we are as a country and what liberty is driven by. So if you start to chisel away at that via just the definition of truth, now you get into things like government spending. What used to be called government spending is now investment. And that nuanced change says quite a lot. global warming, when that didn't show up in the form of warming, it turned into, of course, climate change. Climate change encompasses anything. If it's colder than normal, it's climate change. If it's warmer than normal, if it's wetter, drier, whatever the case might be, it's sort of the perfect term to apply it however you see fit. Censorship, or what was once clearly censorship, is now tolerance. I find that to be quite interesting. And then you take something like equal rights and equal opportunity. What are they now? They're equal outcomes, which sounds similar, but is very different. Freedom is now fairness. And you just see a whole host of these. And maybe the most disturbing one to me is how basically keeping what you've earned has now morphed into greed. You're greedy if you want to keep what you earned. And socialism is now equity. Those are dangerous shifts in vocabulary that can have an outsized impact on what we think and what we end up doing and where we end up at as a society. Now, there are many more tactics that fall under the leech way. I've just hit on a few of these in the podcast. The book goes into a much more thorough discussion, and I encourage you to give it a read when you get a chance. But going back to Ernie's song from Sesame Street in the four job categories and how creators, enablers, and servers on one side sitting there against or contrasted to the leech, which is somewhat different, doesn't look like the other three. You can get this summation much more succinctly than I've gone about it from different individuals over history. I'll start with a contemporary, Rick Santelli from CNBC. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Rick. He is famous for giving his updates on the floor of the Chicago trading pit when market days are open. And Rick once went on a rant that you can find on YouTube if you give it a look. But a couple of years ago when he went on this rant, he was arguing that society should reward people that can carry the water instead of those that drink the water. That's a pretty succinct descriptor of contrasting between creators, enablers, and servers and the leech. Another individual a little before Rick's time, actually about 225 years before Rick, was Thomas Paine. And he separated society into those who pay taxes and those who receive taxes. You can look at our progressive tax code on income tax today to see that being true. I think the top 50% of taxpayers comprise maybe 97%, I want to say, of total income tax collected in the United States. You can also see it with corporations. Many corporations out there, many of them quite large, tens of billions of dollars in enterprise value, have built entire business models and strategies that rest upon the ability to optimize subsidy or collect tax credits, et cetera, by basically pivoting off of government policy and government regulation. So you can see it even in corporate America. In fact, I think you see it even more so in corporate America with respect to Thomas Paine's observation. Another individual was Franz Oppenheimer. And Franz Oppenheimer basically described two methods that man can satisfy core needs. One is through his own work, and the other is through the robbery of another's work. Once again, a pretty good single sentence descriptor of creators, enablers, and servers versus leeches. And then I'm gonna wrap out of these different observations of individuals with a lawyer from the late 60s, early 70s, a prominent lawyer at the time, Howard Moore Jr. And Howard Moore Jr. made a really interesting observation. He said that, quote, "There is no such thing as a legal revolution. All revolutions are illegal," end quote. So I thought about that and I said, boy, that's certainly true. You've got hundreds of years, maybe thousands of years of human history to back that up. But if you look at what's going on today with the leech, we may need an asterisk next to Howard Moore Jr.'s thought or observation, because we may be witnessing the leech delivering the first legal revolution in the history of mankind when you look at the leech way and the tactics that it's employing. I'll close with one final thought on our four broad job categories, and that is on the subject of our global rivals. Our rivals and adversaries out there, they understand the differences between creators, enablers, and servers versus the leech. If you look at China, who is very adept and prone with respect to industrial espionage, where are they looking to procure or pilfer technology from us? From which industries, which sectors? Well, it's obvious, right? You've got manufacturing, defense, financial tech, IT, big data, fossil fuel energy, on and on it goes. You won't find the Chinese or their proxies looking to copy or procure what we're doing in areas like media, government bureaucracy, environmental organizations, urban planning, those types of of areas anytime soon. If anything, not only are the Chinese not looking to copy it, they're looking to utilize those latter groups to do their bidding and to help accelerate the time and increase the efficiency of knowledge transfer from the former groups that I mentioned. Our chief strategic rivals, they understand the difference between these four job categories. They know which one is different. And if anything, while they're looking to procure and steal know-how from the first three groups, they're looking for that fourth one to help it in its effort and endeavor. So thanks for tuning in, constant listener. This wraps up this edition of our Far Middle podcast, and I look forward to talking to you in the soon-to-be future.